The Natural Nurse with Ellen Kamai and Dr. Z, Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And this is Dr. Z, your host, and we are excited to bring you on through another edition of the program where we discuss issues in health, wellness, and alternative medicine today. And for today's program, we have a special guest, international guest, who's joining us all the way from Switzerland, and we're really excited to have on Dr. Chris Vassy. Dr. Vassy joins us from Switzerland, and he completed his naturopathic degree in Paris and began private practice in 1979. And since 1994, he's written books with spiritual approaches to health and nature. Most of them available in French, and they discuss the mystery of blood, laws of nature, and elemental beings. But there's other books that he's put out internationally, including Acid Alkaline Diet, The Water Prescription, The Mono Detox Cure, and on today's show, we're going to be discussing his latest book, The Healing Power of Fever, Your Body's Natural Defense Against Disease. Are you there, Dr. Vassy?
Yes, I'm here. I'm from Switzerland.
Nice to hear from you, and thanks for calling.
Yeah, pleasure.
Tell us a little bit about the training of a naturopathic doctor in Paris. You know, I'm a naturopathic physician. I was trained here in the States, though, at Bastyr University out in Seattle, Washington, and currently practicing in Connecticut. But naturopathic doctors are international, and they're all they basically are trained in many facets of natural medicine. But I'm just curious to hear about your background.
Well, I studied, naturopathy in Paris. It wasn't at university because at that time there weren't any university course on naturopathy. It was in a private school. Mm-hmm. It's mostly taught in that way. Someone, a naturopath, builds up a school and gives courses with different teachers and teaches the logic, the wisdom of naturopathy and all the techniques. And studies last for 3 years, usually, or even more now. And that's what I studied, naturopathy in France, in Paris. So the basic of naturopathy is the notion of the biological terrain, which is so important because the cells are in that terrain, depend on the terrain. And then all the my main axis, the main field where I act is food, nutrition. I always check what the people eat because depending on what we eat, we have toxins, waste products accumulating in the terrain, or we have vitamin or mineral deficiencies, and that's a base of naturopathy. Illness comes because the terrain is either deficient or overcrowded by waste products. So with food, there's a lot of things which can be controlled. The diet of people is very important. And I work also quite a lot with hydrotherapy and also with medicinal herbs.
Yes.
That's my main field of action.
And that's what prompted me to want to read your book is, you know, I've been studying using fever as a medicine for many, many years and had and still work with many patients using also hydrotherapy and what we call hyperthermia treatments. This
yeah.
is where we intentionally bring the fever up. But, you know, to the lay person, particularly some of the American listeners out there, maybe not my listeners, but to other people, they were taught at the first sign of a illness to give on aspirin and fight the fever, that fever was a bad thing. It was a bad sign.
Yeah.
So I know in your book you straighten out the mind of the reader, but can you educate our listeners on how naturopathic physicians and doctors view fever?
Yeah. Usually when someone gets ill and see that the fever is coming and raising, getting higher, the person and the family around the patient become very afraid of that fever, and they think it's an illness in itself. But fever is not an illness. It's just the manifestation of all the work the body is doing to get rid of the infection. It's a natural process which shows that the body is fighting against the intruder, that is usually microbes, which an infection in one part of the body or the other. And therefore, taking an aspirin and taking medicine which will lower or cut completely the fever out is not a good move, because it means that by doing that, the person is cutting the defenses the body is using to fight against the infection. So the infection has more power to overrun the body than it could in the first place. So that's why usually people take antibiotics also to kill the germs. But why is the fever a sign of the defense of the body? Because when the body starts fighting against the infection, the heart will beat more quickly, more harder, so that will produce warmth, heat, and the blood circulation will increase also, because lymphocytes and all the small soldiers of the immune system must be taken to the place where the infection is taking place. And that acceleration of the blood circulation also produces more heat. And the body burns reserves of energy, because it needs a lot of energy to fight. And that also produces heat. And the immune system accelerates and all that. All these different reactions produce heat. And that's the consequence of that, is that the temperature of the body rises, and that the person has fever. In fact, to show that it's not that dangerous, fever is not that dangerous, when someone is doing exercise or sports, his whole body is working very hard and producing heat. And if he took a thermometer to measure his temperature, he would have fever. I mean, his body temperature would be higher than normal, so he would have fever. But of course, when you do exercise, fever is only there for a few hours. In a real fever, when someone is ill, then that's a different matter. It can last a few days. But basically, it's only the sign that the body is working very hard against the infection, and therefore it's a bad move to cut it.
And many people that have long-standing illness, for instance, maybe they have an infection, they get colds all the time, maybe the flu, because, you know, now it's winter, especially in the northern hemisphere, and they may be prone to these infections, and then they may have remembered when they were a child and got infections that they developed a fever. And, you know, maybe their mother gave them a cool bath or enema or other types of teas to produce diaphoresis and help them sweat out the fever, so to speak. But then as they get to be adults, all of a sudden they get sick and they don't seem to be getting a fever. They just have a cold or flu that lasts for many, many weeks, and they just can't get their immune system, or every time somebody coughs on them, they seem to get sick. I'm sure you know these types of patients.
Yeah, yes, sure. Same thing here in Europe.
Yeah. Tell us about these folks and what's going on. What's going on with them?
When a child basically has more energy, vital energy to fight against illnesses than in adults. And that's in relation with the biological terrain. All these different cellular serums, liquids which surround the cells, they must be clean, not have too many waste products. They must not be have too many deficiencies, vitamin deficiencies, and so on. And a child usually is still quite healthy, and the inner strength of the body can fight against infection and fight with a lot of energy, which will raise the body temperature. But adults don't have as much energy usually to fight against, because they've been overworked and stressed and so forth. And also their biological terrain is very full of waste products, especially in the northern hemisphere, because we overeat. And therefore it's much more difficult for these people to burn all the waste products and sweat the fever out. It's not so easy for them. And especially as they probably had a lot of vaccines, and took a different kind of medicine, which kind of pushes the immune system down. It doesn't awake the immune system. It has a tendency to make it work slower and to block it. So usually if someone has always been treated with natural remedies and cures, such a person will have a fever, even if he's adult.
Right. So it seems like you mentioned the terrain, as we say it in our country. Terrain is at the level of the cell. The cell has to take nutrients in and get wastes out. And according to some of the naturopathic wisdom of understanding, there's really only one disease process at the cellular level, and that's where either the cells are being damaged through toxins or free radicals, or they can't get enough nutrients and amino acids and minerals and vitamins and other cell salts and things like that. So it's a balance of, or the pH is off, or something's wrong with the cell membrane or something like that. But basically at that very microscopic level, this is how some of the founding fathers, naturopathy, Benedict Luce and Father Kniep, and these people like that, they saw these things and wrote about them extensively in the late 1800s.
Yeah. And that's in complete opposition to the new way of seeing health and illnesses, because in the allopathic way of treating illnesses, there are hundreds or thousands of different causes for illnesses. And so it's always very complicated to treat them, because you've got to find the cause and fight against that cause. But in the naturopathic way of dealing with things, basically there's only, as you said, there's only one illness. It's the deterioration of the terrain. It has accumulated too many waste products, or is lacking in different nutrients. And that the basic thing which is wrong and which has to be corrected, whatever are the illnesses which show themselves in the surface. So the problem is the same for bronchitis or rheumatism or cancer. Basically, it's the terrain which is not in order, and therapy for a naturopath is, of course, to bring that terrain back into normal, in order for the body to function correctly. And it's even before Lust or Kneipp, Hippocrates, father of medicine, said the same thing. It's a very old knowledge, as you know very well.
Yes, and I even think, getting back to the fever, some of the old Greek healers said, give me a fever and I will cure any infectious disease. That's a pretty bold statement, I always thought, but then in working with even HIV patients out in Seattle with our In the 1980s, we did the Healing AIDS Research Project, and one of the main therapies we did for the men with HIV, mostly men, was the fever treatments, hyperthermia treatments.
Yeah.
And we noticed a tremendous change in their T-cells and their overall well-being using the fever treatments. So let's talk a little bit about the body's fever versus doing an artificial fever, which we can induce. Well, there's many ways to induce. If people are interested, all you have to do is go on YouTube, and on YouTube there are sophisticated, you know, you can do fever treatments and hyperthermia very low-tech and very high-tech. There are different ways. You know, we're mostly talking about the low-tech way that you can do in your own hot tub, whirlpool, or even bathtub versus sophisticated technologies that are done in cancer clinics around the world, and particularly I know of several in America where they're doing this too. I'm sure in Europe it's very it's reached into many, many hospital settings and clinics and things like that. But tell us a little bit about the natural fever process with the hypothalamus and things like that, and versus how you may raise the fever in a patient.
Yeah. Well, when a fever starts, that means when the body is fighting against the microbe, the infection, there are many beneficial things which take place. First, by accelerating all the metabolism, a lot of waste products, toxins are burnt. Mm-hmm. And that's, as I said before, is very important because the terrain is, when the terrain has too many waste products, it can't function, the organs cannot function correctly. And worse than that, the microbes are very happy to live in the body. When someone has a terrain which is really clean with no waste products, the microbes can come in, but they will die very soon because the surrounding is so healthy that it's, for the person, that it's very unhealthy for them, and they will die. So burning the toxins, the waste products, is one of the good things which takes place during a fever. And as everything is accelerating, there's a big elimination of toxins by sweating is one of the ways, but also the intestines will empty themselves, and a lot of toxins will go out of the body and clear the biological terrain. And then, of course, the rise in temperature will be not comfortable for the patients, and can be dangerous if it goes too high. But the same thing is true for microbes. When the temperature rises, the microbes are not so happy anymore, and they cannot proliferate as they did before. It's a way of killing microbes. And another one wonderful thing which happens with fever is that it stimulates the immune system to work more faster. So it increases the production of lymphocytes, the small soldiers of the immune system. And also it increases the efficiency. Different research have been made on that point. So a lot of good things take place during fever. But all those efforts in a natural fever when someone is ill is produced by the energy of the body. The body must work hard to bring all those different actions which are beneficial for the body. So that's a good thing. And that's why some people, as you mentioned, say, some doctors or naturopaths say, give me a bathtub and hot water and I'll cure you everything.
Yeah.
Because fever can arises not in one illness or two illnesses, but in many different illnesses, fever appears because it's a normal process which is used by the body to defend itself against disease and infections. So it's common to so many illnesses because it's a basic treatment, a basic way the body uses to fight against illnesses. So any form of therapy which can copy a fever or induce a fever is, of course, very welcome. And there are different kinds. the kind we use in naturopathy is what we call warm baths or very warm baths, hyperthermic baths.
Right.
And that's very easy. Everybody can do it. Should I explain how to do it now?
Yeah, I mean, and then also let's give out the cautions for people, because I always like people to make sure they have a buddy. It's just like swimming. You don't want to go swimming in the ocean without a buddy. You know what I mean by that? You know, a companion. So you want to make sure that if you're going to be raising your temperature, that you check in with a companion who could check in on you, make sure that you're still with us.
Yeah, because when you go in a hot bath, a very hot bath, then the heart has to work hard, and some people get dizzy and it faints at the most. But that's why it's good to have someone next to you. But the way to do it is very simple. You put a little of lukewarm water at the bottom of the bath, and then you go in the bath, stopped, and you sit. And then you put warm water.
Would you want to take? Would you want to take your temperature first before you start that, doctor?
In fact, here I'm talking about this process is used for people in between fevers who want to copy a fever to beneficiate from the good effects. So they could take their temperature at the beginning. It should be normal. Normal temperature, but then they add hot water slowly, progressively, until their whole body is, not the head of course, is under the water. So their whole body is surrounded by very warm water. It should be quite warm to have an effect, and this warmth will come in the body, and the body will have to, in order to keep its temperature, which is much higher now. The person can take his temperature again. In the mouth would be the best thing to do. And the temperature has raised a lot. The heart is beating much faster. The blood circulation has accelerated. And as the temperature is higher than normal, the body tries to bring it back to normal. And to do that, it has the basic system to do it is to sweat. So the person will start to sweat, which cannot be really clearly seen in the bath because the person is in the water, but you can see it on the forehead.
Right.
And also when you go out of the bath afterwards, the sweat process is put into movement and the person will start sweating. But because of the increase in heat, in the temperature, body temperature, as I said, the heart will beat faster. All the metabolism will accelerate. The small, very small blood vessels like the capillaries will dilate. I mean, they increase their diameter so that the blood can really circulate in all through the blood circulation system, all the vessels, and irrigate deep into the tissues, organic tissues, all the cells, everything. Usually those very small blood vessels are shut or obstructed by waste products, which have accumulated with time. But with a hot bath, as those vessels increase in size, blood can flow through them and push away and take with it all the waste products. So there's a cleaning process a purifying process which takes place deep in the organic tissues by this increase in circulation. And it seems maybe exaggerated, but if someone does such a bath, he can see a lot of toxins are moved from the depths to the surface, and it's so much so that some people can have headaches if they proceed in a too sudden and violent manner, because a lot of toxins from the bottom have come back to the surface, are in the blood vessels, and can give the person can feel unwell or have headaches or be nauseated and so forth. So that's why, now a word of caution, one should not try and make a beat a record temperature to the highest possible. when the person is in the bath, hot bath, he should feel at ease, but very warm. He shouldn't feel dizzy or on the point of fainting. He should feel well, at ease, but he's in a position where he's fighting against the heat and has to make a little effort. And that's correct, and the bath will last for, at the beginning, a quarter of an hour, maybe 20, 25, half an hour, depending on if you are used to it or not. And, of course, the temperature of the water can go higher and higher, well, not too high, depending on the training you have with those baths. So at the beginning, go slowly. Not the temperature shouldn't be too high, but next bath, a bit higher, a bit, and stay a bit longer, and so forth. It's always being at ease in the bath. Well, you've got to try it, and then you understand how it should be done. And this is creating an artificial fever. You can take the temperature. This temperature has raised a lot, and the person feels as he has a fever also. But of course, it will not last for very long. But even so, it has its effect. And when the person goes out of the bath, he then lies down, and he will see that he will go on sweating for half an hour or three quarters of an hour, because he has accumulated so much warmth in himself.
Right, and so I like to yeah. have patients before they start kind of gather together some sheets and old sheets and blankets that they can, you know, if they get all toxic from the perspiration and the sebaceous secretions, that they can easily launder, and they can lay on a yoga mat or something like that, and then cover themselves up with blankets. And I even like to put on a winter hat, a wool hat, to keep the try to keep the heat in the body for as long a period of time, because and we're going to need to take a break because I'm looking at the time. It's half hour. But when we return, I have more questions about doing the fever treatment and then other applications for it. Like, I know here in America, we see an epidemic of Lyme disease, and I've been very successful helping patients with Lyme disease using the hyperthermia, and even cancer and many other maladies. So when we get back from our break, we'll be right back. We have Dr. Chris Vassy, and he is joining us from Switzerland. A real privilege to have him on the program right here. So stay tuned. And welcome back, listeners, to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamfro, naturopathic physician, and you can always get in contact with myself and Dr. Kamai at our websites. Dr. Kamai's website is naturalnurse.com, and mine is drznaturally.com. And with us from Switzerland is Dr. Christopher Vassy, and he is the author of many books, in particularly Acid Alkaline Diet, Water Prescription, which we kind of maybe want to talk about a little bit too towards the tail end of the program. But today we're talking about his latest book, which caught my eye, and I immediately wanted to get in contact with Dr. Vassy, and that is The Healing Power of Fever, Your Body's Natural Defense Against Disease. And, you know, like I mentioned before, many people in allopathic medicine were taught that at the first sign of a fever, you give an aspirin or a Tylenol or ibuprofen or one of the paracetam or whatever they have over in Europe there, too. And we're basically telling you no, that fever is an intelligent response from our body, and it should not be suppressed unless it's very dangerous. And I guess maybe we should talk about that, Dr. Vassy. Like, there, maybe the toxin is interfering with autonomic nervous system, which controls, you know, they have chemical toxicity or heavy metal poisoning, or their thyroid is very, very low, and their normal temperature is like, say, 95 or even sometimes lower than that. I mean, I've been amazed at the when people have such low thyroid, they don't sweat. So sometimes the teas that I know you talk about in your book, which, by the way, is called The Healing Power of Fever, Your Body's Natural Defense Against Disease, but the herbs could be very beneficial. Can you go over that with for the listeners?
Yes. In my opinion, the best way to make someone sweat is to bring heats. So it could be with the hot baths we've talked about, or with other putting the patient in the bed with warm bottles of warm water bottles, sorry, and so forth to bring a lot of heat to the body and help it sweat. Mm-hmm. But of course, there are also different kind of plants which can be used. And the ones I know, but maybe you've got different ones in America, are linden. It seems it's a very common plant, but linden, lime, is something which helps the body sweat.
Yeah.
And also chamomile is also a good plant for that.
Very so good. We have those. We definitely have those.
Yeah. Yeah. So the idea is to take a tea made with that plant and a concentrated tea, not just one leaf. The tea, you've got to put enough of the plant in the water to have something which is quite powerful, and that will help the person sweat. There's also arnica, which is a good plant for that.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what plants you have in
America.
Well,
we use achillea, which we call yarrow. Achillea seems to work pretty well. We also use one that's called a bone set. Eupatorium, and that was used for, you know, when people had they felt also very severe muscle aches associated sometimes with the flu. We would give them Eupatorium tea, and then also something that we call elderberry. So those are some. Even peppermint sometimes can be. I mean, peppermint can cool the body, but sometimes it can be a good diaphoretic to break, to allow them to sweat more easily.
Yeah. My naturopathic teacher used to say there are different plants which help you sweat, but the main effect comes from the warm water that you drink.
Right, exactly. Oh, that's interesting, yeah.
And it's true, and if you drink 6-7 cups of warm linden or even warm water, then you'll start sweating because of all the warmth which you have swallowed with tea. But
now, if they swallow,
half-joking, I think both are very efficient. The warmth you give and also the plant which has an action on the sweating.
Now, if they take the tea, they have to wait a while before they take their oral temperature.
Yes.
Because it will influence the thermometer.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So just a word of caution for somebody: if they drink the tea and then take their temperature, and it's 115, don't get worried.
Don't panic. Yeah.
So tell us. I want to just hear in the last 15 minutes of the show. I want to hear a little bit about your other books because I didn't get a chance to read through those, but they sound very interesting too. The acid alkaline diet, which I guess has to do with playing a huge role in the Tehran, and also the water prescription. Are you talking about external water or just that people are very dehydrated and water is very important carry the lymph for the lymph fluid?
Yeah, in the water prescription book, I talk about the role of the water inside the body. When someone drinks water, what happens with it? Where does it go? And it goes in the biological terrain. And in order for the cells to work well, correctly, there's a need of a certain amount of water. But nowadays, many people eat fruits which is full of salt or which is very dry, and they don't drink much during the day, and therefore they are dehydrated. Not dehydrated like someone crossing the desert without any water, of course, but slightly, a little bit dehydrated. And that means that the cells cannot work as well as they should, and different illnesses appear because of that. And the first illness or symptom is that people get very tired. They're always lacking in energy, they're always tired, and it's just because of a lack of water.
Wow.
And if they start to drink more water, enough water, which is said to be around 2.5 liters here in Europe a day, then they will be quite astonished to see that they have much more energy, they're not tired the whole time as they were before. That's just by drinking enough water. But that's just one point. All the enzymes have to work in a surrounding which is rich in water, and if it's not the case, they start to slow down their work or interrupt their work. So that means the many different problems can arise because of a lack of water in the body. And it's quite incredible what results, what are the effects of drinking more water.
Now,
try it to be convinced.
Yeah, well, I know.
People are usually quite surprised. They say, yes, I've drank much more water, as you said. Now I've had more energy. I'm eliminating better. Everything is getting into your hand again.
Do you recommend water that has some minerals in it? Or what's the best type of water, do you think?
Well, in my book, I'm just talking about water in general, because the point I wanted to make was to say that people have to drink more water in order to get healthy again.
Uh-huh.
And I also talk about the quality of the water, but that's not the main point, because there's so many other books on the subject.
Right.
I wanted to talk about the quantities. But to answer your question, the water has to be clean, pure, without any microbes, no pollution in it. So where do you get such a water? Well, here, I can tell you the situation here in Europe. Tap water sometimes is quite good if you live next to a mountain, near a mountain, because you get the water that comes from mountain.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite pure. There's only a minimum of product to kill the microbes, so it's quite good. Otherwise, people buy bottles of water, mineral waters, and which are pure because they're taken at the spring where the water comes. Or they buy a filter of one kind or another to filter the water and make it clean, to get rid of all the pollution and so forth. So
yeah.
Those are the different ways of having pure water. And now, of course, if someone wants to have water with a lot of minerals and trace elements, then he can add a few drops of preparation. There are many on the market. Or if he wants water which has a pH which is higher than 7, maybe 8 or 9, to fight against acidification of the body, then there are other drops he can add to it.
Right. Now tell us about, that brings us to your other book, which is called The Acid Alkaline Diet. That's very interesting.
Yeah. Well, in the body there are substances which are acids and some which are alkaline, and they should be in balance. But the way, and that's if they are in balance, the pH of the terrain, that is the blood, the cellular serums and so forth, is correct. It's 7, let's say 7 to be simple. And the body is healthy, can fight easily against infections and so forth. But the way we live nowadays, we have a tendency to acidify our body by the way we eat. Most of the foods people eat in general are people who are not conscious of healthy eating. It's very acidifying, too much meat, too much bread, sugar, coffee, wine, cigarettes and all that.
Right.
That's very acidifying. People are also living in such a stressful way that they acidify a lot. If they and so forth. So there's a process of acidifying of the body. The balance is not there anymore, and many different illnesses can arise from that, like skin problems, skin becomes very dry and has eczema, joint problems. All the joint problems are in relation with acidity. It can be also the tooth have cavities, people lose their hair too much, and so forth. So there are small problems like losing your hair, which is not too important, but other important things which happen, like the immune system will lose its strength and so forth. So in my book, I talk about all the illnesses which can arise following an imbalance between the acid and alkaline, and especially I explain why it is so, why people are acidic, and how to correct it, because right. That's the most important thing. And the main point in that is that they should eat differently. They should eat alkaline foods. I give the list of acid, alkalizing foods, right. And also the list of the acidifying foods. And, of course, you've got to eat more alkaline foods than acidifying foods, which means eating a lot of vegetables, basically a lot more vegetables, potatoes, bananas, almonds, and so forth, to have a big intake of alkaline substances. And a very low intake of acidifying substances, and that means eating less yeast, cutting off sugar and different things like that. And the result of that is that if someone follows an alkaline diet, his terrain will become in balance again. The acid-alkaline balance will be reestablished, and many, many illnesses will disappear.
Yeah. And what about the mono diet, your mono diet book? That's a great naturopathic concept about, like, people eat so many things and... But then yeah. If they can't handle actually going on a fast, they may try a mono diet. Talk yes. about that in the last few minutes of the show.
Yeah, a mono diet is a diet with a mono food. That is, you eat only one kind of food. Like a very famous cure is a diet is the raisin cure diet. People then eat raisins or carrots or whatever. From morning to evening at each meal, if it's carrots, it can be in the form of raw carrots or cooked carrots or juices. It doesn't matter, but it's only carrots without salt or anything. The idea is that when somebody stops eating, his body doesn't receive all the nutrients it needs to function. And therefore, the body will search for what is missing. Where? Not outside of the body, because the person doesn't give more food than what it gives, but it will fetch the missing nutrients in its own tissues. And the same thing happens as during a fast. The body starts autolyzing the organic tissues. That is, it digests the tissues to fetch the proteins, the minerals, vitamins it needs. And this process, and that's the wonderful thing about it, doesn't take place in just any old way, starting with the brain or the heart, which would be very bad because after a few days the brain would not be able to function anymore. No, it utilizes first the sick tissues and all the waste products. So when someone follows a restrictive diet like a mono diet, his body is burning all the waste products which have accumulated to try and find useful things in those waste products to use to make the body function. So during such a cure, the waste products are burnt, eliminated, and the terrain becomes cleaner and cleaner because the waste products are eliminated. So in the book, I explain how to do it and why it is effective and all the different variations which can be introduced and how to check that everything is under control and everything is going well.
Well, I'll have to get that for my students. That sounds like a great, because we always talk about that. We also talk about how it kind of rests the intestine because, you know, now we know that the intestine is so important for our immune function, and our neurotransmitters are all in the intestine too. So, and a lot of people that are having, when they have problems with the digestive system, that means it leads to systemic problems and then toxifies the blood. So that's another way that people can become toxic, is when the intestines aren't, and the digestive system isn't working at that point.
It's the door inside the body. All the food and poisons come in the digestive tract, so the intestine, and from there into the blood and in the terrain.
Exactly. Well, where can we get your book, and what's your website, Doctor?
My website is christophervasey.ch. Christopher Vasey in one word.
Right.
Christopher and then Vasey, V-A-S-E-Y, .ch, C-H for Switzerland.
Uh-huh.
And there's a French part, but also the English part, with many articles and the presentation of all my different books. And my books, like The Fever, Healing Power of Fever, is published by Inner Tradition, Vermont, Rochester, Vermont.
Right.
So they have a website where you can order the book. www.innertradition.com.
So innertraditions.com. It's Inner Traditions books. And probably it's on Amazon and other
Amazon, of
big
course, you can
places.
Also the books,
Right. Well, boy, I really I thank you for your expertise. You made quite a bit of sense, hopefully, to the listeners about using fever and hydrotherapy and fasting and changing their diet. You know, if people did these things, drinking enough water, these are basic. This isn't rocket science, right? As I always say to my patients, health is not always so difficult with so many expensive technologies and things. The way that it's the way that medicine is going, it's not too bad, and it's very easy to do these things.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time and for calling us from Switzerland. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you. Goodbye.
Okay, see ya. And that does it for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And that show, I'm sure, will be archived right on Progressive Radio Network. Thank you, and stay healthy. Take care, folks.